And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 10 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite review show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me today, Chris and Lawrence. Chris, Lawrence, how are you guys?
Good, so far.
Okay. I'm fantastic.
Are you? So, we're actually going to do things a little differently tonight, because tonight... A local garbage truck took down a power pole and left me without power for most of the night. So, I did not get to see a whole hell of a lot of Dynamite tonight. So, graciously, Chris is going to take the lead on this show. So, everyone, brace yourselves. Let's see how Chris does having to do this at the last minute. He didn't have much time to prepare. No pressure. I mean, this is becoming one of the most popular shows on the PWO podcast network, but you know.
Yeah, pile it on, why won't you? Well, I guess for starters, we can always do what we have been doing the past couple weeks, and that's really quickly going through AEW Dark, which did showcase itself yesterday out of Hoffman and Stacey, which, Jeff, you were there in person to watch those matches since they were the post-Dynamite recordings, basically.
Yeah, so, sure. So I unfortunately was busy with other things, so I did not get to actually watch Dark, but I did see the matches. So I do know that Nyla Rose was on commentary. Chris, how did she do?
Nyla did fine. Definitely a couple of heelish one-liners in which she's zinged Excalibur pretty good a couple of times there. Definitely taking the side of the heels more often than not. But I thought she handled herself quite well in the role for like a one-week guest spot like they've been doing the past couple weeks with the rotating table.
Any chance she bollocked him for assuming that Shima won Super J-Cup or...
I'm trying to recall off the top of my head. There were at least a couple of zingers there. I'm just not sure if that Shima Super Jacob thing was one of them. But
seriously, somebody needs to tell him that that never happened, brother.
Yeah. So for starters, we did open it with possibly, you know, the least favorite match, I think, for everybody involved here out of that particular episode, which was Jimmy Havoc versus Brandon Cutler. Simple enough, it was just a way of establishing Havoc's whole, he got fined $10,000 for using a staple gun on people. He eventually did win the match with an Acid Rainmaker after a couple minutes and decided to take said staple gun and staple a $10,000 check that he wrote to AEW offices to Brandon Cutler's head. After that, they even did a backstage segment basically explaining that he was going to get fined again, and he was going to keep getting fined as long as he kept doing that with the staple gun thing. And Jimmy Havoc basically went, I don't give a shit. So,
this match fucking stank. So
that's the sum up that we all really need. Next.
That match. We're moving on. Don't watch it.
From there, we do go over where we had the self-proclaimed chairman of AEW, or as we call him, the good hand of AEW in the most sarcastic way possible, and Sean Spears.
What's this wee shit?
What, that he's sarcastically a good hand, but he's not?
I don't even go that far sarcastically. That's just, I try not to even acknowledge him, to be honest.
Well, he's in this match, and it's against Sonny Kiss, who had another stellar performance in terms of getting his spots in, getting himself really nice and over as, you know, a babyface fighting from underneath, which was pretty cool. The crowd acknowledging as much was nice as well, but eventually Sean Spears wins through the usual chicanery, and then him and Tully add insult to injury by giving him a spike pile driver post-match, which... Oof.
I had to convince. I spent most of this match talking with the Cubs fan. So,
okay.
So yeah,
I mean, that says what you needed to say.
Yeah,
there,
I
right?
mean, no disrespect to Sonny Kiss, but yeah, when I saw Sean Spears was in this, I was like, oh fuck this, you know. I checked out at that point, you know.
Here's my thing. I'm just wondering if Tony Khan is already having like buyer's remorse on this guy signing, because he didn't come for cheap. That much is for sure.
According to a tweet by a guy that I think can kiss my ass. He's pretty much already said as much that he's had some buyer's that Tony Khan's had some buyer's remorse on something. Oh, I guarantee you there has to be at least three wrestlers that Tony Khan has buyer's remorse for.
I mean, you're gonna have those swings and misses sometimes with a new product like this.
I'm sure there's an alternate universe where Sean Spears is like one of the most over and consistently good acts in AEW, but this is not that universe.
No.
Absolutely not. But from there, we do go from matches that kind of were just either in the middle to bad to, well, a really good match to main event AEW Dark, which was the team of Proud and Powerful of Santana and Ortiz against the tandem of Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy of the Jurassic Express. And yeah, that was a lot of fun to watch.
I'm going to go as far as say that was probably the best match of the night in Hoffman States, including Dynamite. So
strong, but
yeah, it was great. Luchasaurus made an appearance afterwards, got really over, and of course, you know, the Inner Circle had to, you know, do a mass beatdown on him. So of course, you know, the Elite made the save. I don't know how much of this made tape.
But it made tape up to the Young Bucks running in for the save and basically scaring them off, and then that's where it cut off, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was a lot more than that. They were, you know, doing, like, you know, shtick and
stuff
and
for the crowd, basically.
Stuff for the crowd, okay. Throwing T-shirts out, you know, that sort of shit. So, but I didn't expect all of that to make tape. I didn't know how much. But, yeah, the Young Bucks make the save on Jurassic Express.
Yes. Good match. The commentary was especially good for this one. Nyla especially shone, I thought, during some of the exchanges of poking fun of like the Jurassic Express guys and stuff like that too. So
yeah, because they have to, because that's the heel shtick. Oh, you know, oh hey, you know, Marco Stunt is short. Ha ha. Yeah, you know. But that's that. So anyway, you're leading the show, so go on, Chris.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's AEW Dark wrapped up, and then from there we go into Dynamite tonight coming out of Champaign, Illinois, at the University of Illinois' campus.
Yep. In Champaign. UIUC, yep. Urbana-Champaign, from the State Farm Center.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And again, they start with Pyro, quick introduction of things, and then they kick off to the biggest match that they announced for the week, which was the six-man tag between the Young Bucks and Dustin Rhodes up against the Inner Circle of Sammy Guevara, Santana, and Ortiz, which
they led off with that.
Yes, they led off with that match.
Damn. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, high energy all around. I got to appreciate Dustin Rhodes for being a good team player passes, for fuck's sakes.
This was the Dustin Rhodes show. This whole match was
show. It definitely was. Him and Guevara got off to a hot start there. Things just clicked really well during all of this, to be honest with you. Like, it was a fun, action-packed kind of opener to get the crowd really into it for the rest of the night, and I felt that it set the tone pretty well for things to come. The Young Bucks do their shtick, which, if, you know, if you've seen it once, you've seen it pretty much just about every time, but Dustin made those boys work really well with it as well. And, I mean, kudos to the Inner Circle guys for holding their own as well. Sammy Guevara taking a particularly, you know, gnarly bump in his own right by going for that shooting star that got intercepted by double super kicks in midair.
With his selfie cam.
Yeah, he was doing the vlogging portion basically at a certain point and decided to do that touring set.
Well, the one heels wrestler right there, baby.
Boy, Jack Grealish is a little shit, isn't he?
Yeah. But again, you have some, you had some crazy little sequences there. Sammy at one point had a 630 senton that he hit, and Dustin Rhodes somehow kicked out of that, which was,
I'm pretty sure, like, Sammy is, like, the son that Chris Jericho wishes that he had.
As opposed to the
other one that he doesn't ever talk about as much anymore.
Okay, well, I don't know anything about Chris Irvine's personal life, but
something Spanish got a little bit of the bubbly blah blah blah. Either way, it's basically a senton assisted double pile driver combination thing that ends up getting the win for the Rhodes Bucks team up. Commentary from there just kind of hypes up the remainder of the card, and from there we immediately go into Phoenix versus Trent.
Well, hey, hold on a second. I just want to ask the question: how seriously do we need to start looking at Dustin Rhodes as possibly the comeback wrestler of the year at this point?
He's a top five wrestler in the company.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's a strong argument for that for sure.
I mean, there's not only a strong argument, I think it is the argument.
I mean, who else in 2019 has had a comeback? I think the only ones I can think of that have maybe had a bigger and consistently better comeback in 2019 has been the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
But
so, Trent versus Rey Fénix. All right, Chris, yes. make me happy here, Chris.
That was a banger. Another very good singles match. Again, Rey Fénix proving that he can hold his own just as well in singles as he does in tags, in my opinion. Still way too many of the heel antics with the Lucha Bros, and we've discussed this at length already in multiple episodes of how tired of that we already are.
Well, believe me, we're going to go over it again.
Yeah, most definitely, but for what they did with the match, some really good stuff all around. Trent had some close falls, which I felt you almost spit on because of the fact that he had beaten both of the guys in that team over the course of the last couple of weeks. But eventually, Fénix gets a pretty fun sequence with the rolling ace crusher, the springboard soul butt in the corner, and then doing the spinning muscle buster for the win. After that, even in the loss, Trent's just like, all right, man, let's just like shake hands and stuff like that. Fénix is just like pushing and shoving him aside and stuff like that. And Trent immediately actually tackles him, like starts beating on him until Fénix retreats and stuff. So not exactly, this stuff isn't exactly over from the looks of it.
Yeah,
Lucha Bros a lot of enemies, to say the least.
Well, you know what? That's fine if they want to get a lot of enemies. Again, I just don't understand why they think that turning the Lucha Bros heels, despite the fact that, yes, again, Pentagon has spent a lot of his career as a Rudo, but once again, these are wrestlers that not only have just the physical and athletic prowess, and people toss this word athletic around, but I mean, in Phoenix's case, it's 100% the truth, and these are, again, wrestlers that people in the U.S. Indies got to like in real life because of how they conducted themselves, you know, how they interacted with people and things like that, you know? And I just don't understand why they're going. I mean, I understand that, again, promotions need heels, but these ain't the guys, you know? Maybe I'm just talking to the wind here, but
I fully agree. I mean, it's stupid. It just doesn't make any fucking sense. I mean, you have two of these guys that are like masked icons, like that kids would love,
right?
And yet you're throwing them out there. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I really, really don't understand it.
I mean, again, it's you know, it's like that argument we saw on the internet last week that Chris and I discussed on the Black Friday episode. I mean, Pentagon looks like he's straight out of Mortal Kombat, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that was you who said that on a previous episode. No, either way, it's the truth. I mean,
yeah, it's just there's so much more potential with merch, promotion, all these different things that you could be doing with both of these guys. And I feel like it's just money left on the table if you're just having them play. Not even like the kind of heel that Pentagon was during a majority of his career, but like the very sort of like North American-esque type heels that just cheat to win at every turn and is just like the same kind of old shit. Seen much many times.
Exactly, Chris. That is exactly a great point. It's one thing if you're going to have Pentagon be the fucking like badass, I'm breaking people's arms like guy you got from, you know, Lucha Underground. But this is just stupid. I mean, it just makes him look like a bunch of chodes.
Yeah, and I mean, even in the midst of them trying to make them heels, you still hear Cerro Miedo chants, you know?
Oh, yeah, you're not going to get these guys booed. Yeah, it's not going to happen. There's not a fucking chance in the world that these guys are going
to... And Twitter's already... Twitter has begun to rebel on this, too.
Oh, I know, because it's absolutely asinine.
Yeah, but... Anyway,
so, speaking of things that are personally asinine to me, at the very least, after commercials, here's Cody Rhodes, and here's another 10-minute promo.
I fell asleep during this promo. I legitimately, I honest to God, I actually fell asleep. I couldn't even tell you what happened.
I can at least try to explain because I figured I was going to be running point on this show, so I had to be somewhat ready. Point is, he ran down all of the different things with Scar being a reminder of failure. Butcher, Blade, and Bunny attack, familiar with their work. He referenced Beyond Wrestling, which, hey, good for him on that regard. That's at least a point.
Did he reference every time, what's the band called? Every Time I Die?
Yeah, he mentioned them by names. He said Andy Williams, Pepper Parks, and Allie. Like, he mentioned them by name as well on that. So, but then he kind of just goes into this whole, like, pomp and circumstance kind of thing and basically, like, saying that he needs to wrestle MJF and that he's just, like, if it's a matter of, like, giving him, like, money, shoes, watches, whatever, he started taking, like, shit off and tossing it onto the mat, gave some kid, like, $100 out of briefcase with $50,000, whatever it was, insinuated that Maxwell Jacob Friedman's nothing more than a Bush League NWO version of Chris Jericho at some point, which, okay, you do you, I guess. Again, it's just one of those things where it's basically the whole, I need to fight MJF by whatever means necessary. And there was also kind of a hilarious comment in which he mentioned about not dealing in absolutes when MJF said he would not wrestle Cody, which is kind of hilarious for a guy who self-imposed a ban on never wrestling for a championship again when nobody really forced him to.
Damn.
Anyways, moving on from that, we go backstage to Joey Janela.
I was saying, do we get the feeling that maybe Cody kind of booked himself into a corner?
Yeah.
Would it really surprise anybody at this point?
Also, can we also once again make the comment that the Elite seem to be the most subpar part of your average AEW show?
I mean, we'll see. I mean, for some, like, you know, decent, like, Bucks, like, TV match stuff, like they had in the opener. I mean, yeah.
Well, okay, granted, but I'm talking about, like, promo-wise, even storyline-wise.
Yeah, well, I mean, Cody was hot there. They had some hot stuff going for a little while.
He cut that absolute fire promo right before the Jericho match.
Yeah.
And this was basically like the complete opposite of that.
Yeah,
this time around.
It's cooled off.
And my take on this is that, like, you don't need to dedicate 10 minutes of your mainstream show for that when you have four other matches to go on that could use an extra minute or two. So, dumb. Anyways, after that, Janela's backstage. He's basically interviewing the whole thing with Jon Moxley, basically saying he took on the challenge that, you know, remember June, remember Fyter Festival, this time it counts. You're going to have to kill me if you need to beat me, blah, blah, blah. And Mox literally just rolls up into the interview, looks around, kind of just like rubs his hand on his face, is like the most disappointed dad look ever, and just goes, kids, and then just walks off.
That's all he had to say. That's all he had to say.
Oh. So no reference of Joey shooting at GCW?
No.
Last week around this time?
Nope.
Sometimes less is more. Less is more.
Indeed. From there, we go to commercial break, come back, and then we get another one of the Dark Order videos, although this time it's showing some of the people on previous vignettes actually going through the process of the indoctrination, accepting the Dark Order. One of them swears that he wants to do it because he wants revenge. He gets a mask, so he joins. And then one of the other ones basically says that he wanted to join the Dark Order because, well, he just wanted friends. And they didn't take kindly to that. So Stu Grayson beats the crap out of that guy alongside all the putties. So,
this
was some wild stuff. Was from them. I'm curious to see where this all actually heads for this team. I really love these segments. I mean, they're really they're really creepy. And they really kind of put over their character of just being just cult leaders. But too bad that there's a whole nother cult storyline on the same show.
And well, we will get to that.
I do want to say though that I still hope that eventually we're going to find out that there are sleeper members of the Dark Order already signed to the AEW roster, and after some major achievement happens, they'll reveal themselves as being members of the Dark Order. You know,
Listen, that would be sheer brilliance, but again. Given our years of watching wrestling and sometimes how they get these softballs and yet they still whiff on them, it's a wait and see approach. But
oh yeah, no, I'm with you, but I just know how I would be writing it if it were me.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. From there though, we do go into a quick little squash match in which Nyla Rose just beats the shit out of Leva Bates.
Very pleased.
Yeah, Peter Avalon got the hands, too. It was perfect. The biggest thing that took off after the squash happened, where Nyla Rose did win, was her hitting a second Beast Bomb on Bates, going for a third. Shanna shows up. They start fighting. And eventually, Nyla takes the upper hand on that as they go into the picture-for-picture commercials. But she brings out a table during the commercial break. Actually puts Rick Knox through it with a Beast Bomb when he tried to stop her from doing it to Shanna. Then takes Shanna, power bombs her into Rick Knox on the confines of the broken table.
Oh my god.
And then you see a shot of shocked and awed Britt Baker in the front row just staring at it and watching what she did.
That was fucking hilarious.
which they did they showed their NXT takeover when at the ending of the War Games match when Adam Cole took the biggest bump known to man off the cage with, I think it was Ciampa. Either way, the reference on it was hilarious because commentary immediately followed up with Shivani going, "That's Britt Baker," and then Excalibur immediately going, "That's Adam Cole's girlfriend."
Oh no!
Yeah, it was a pretty good rib. I gotta say.
God bless Excalibur, man.
That was a solid rib.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, hey, it's good that AEW can. I was wondering if or how they were gonna respond to that, and well, I guess that's how. So
Yeah. So from there, commercial. Chris Jericho was advertised as, having a segment within the show in which he had things to say. So he shows up for that with Jake Hager at his side. He gets on the mic, runs down Champaign, Illinois, just like he's ran down every other town that he's been in so far. Talks up the sales of a little bit of the bubble, which apparently it's been selling well. So good on him for that.
My buddy bought a bottle.
My God.
Yeah.
Any chance we can get a review of it?
I don't know. I gotta ask him. I don't know if he's got it yet.
Yeah. If any of you out there have had a little bit of the bubbly, hit us up. I'm at Strong Style Story without the E in Style on Twitter. Interested to know your thoughts on how this wine tastes. Anyway,
we like booze, boys. What can we say? The whole point here is that he was told by AEW offices Chris Jericho that he has to wrestle one more match in 2019 before the year is done, contractually obligation. So because he is Le Champion, he gets to choose who he wrestles. So he's made a list. Or wait, not a list. He's made a lexicon. The lexicon of Le Champion, as he called it. A.K.A. a list of everyone he's never wrestling again in 2019. And the list went as follows. Jon Moxley, Cody Rhodes, The Young Bucks, Papa Buck, Uncle Buck, Hangman Page, Diamond Dallas Page, Scorpio Sky, Too Cold Scorpio, any member of the Scorpions, Michael Nakazawa, a number of people named Kenny, which included Kenny from South Park and Kenny Chesney at that, Chubby Guy in the Fifth Row of the Popcorn, Darby Allin, Alan Jones, Evil Uno, Marty, and just as he mentioned Marty, the Jurassic Express theme hit, because dinosaurs did get mentioned at some point there as well. Once they arrived, and Jericho basically went, I was getting the next item on my list, and the next one was dinosaurs. So, Luchasaurus, you're out. You can't do this. And also little children. Sorry, Marco Stunt. Can't do it either.
Uh-oh.
So, the Luchasaurus gets on the mic, and he says he's got a master's degree in medieval history and asks Jericho if he's ever heard of stuff like the Eleanor of Aquitaine, and goes on into a quick rant about dinosaurs being marginalized for 65 million years, and that... As far as Marco Stunt goes, he's small for his age, but he's more of a man than Jericho will ever be. This eventually leads into Jericho calling out Jungle Boy and running him down a little bit, calls him a Hollywood Golden Child, and then proceeds to call him a piece of shit that can't last 10 minutes with him. So Jungle Boy takes the mic, basically says, I can, and I'm going to kick your ass.
Cue the roll. Yep, I came at this point, and sorry, yep. I missed half of that because my lights just went out again, but it looked like it was just, actually, my lights just went out. I didn't lose anything, so I don't know.
Weird.
Electricity
shit.
Is weird around my my domain tonight. So, I really like this. This is, akin to the Darby Allin bit. Jericho, a young up-and-coming guy going up against Jericho.
And yeah, this is exactly what they should be doing, in my opinion, to elevate a couple of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, how do you go against that? I mean...
No, it's perfect. I think that's what needs to be, happening a little bit more before Jericho does drop the title, is kind of give the rub a little bit to some of those up-and-coming guys and, establish some guys a little better.
Yeah. Now, what sucks is that ever since that Darby Allin rub, we've barely seen Darby. Oh, I'll take that back. He did have that. He did have that main event match against Moxley. I forgot about that. So, yeah. I guess he hasn't been seen since.
And I figure it could be a situation too where he might be busy with some other, because with the AEW guys, they have their contracts and they're showing up for shows and such, but they also have, other stuff that they've got going on outside. Darby, for example, we know is being an avid skateboarder, probably doing videos and stuff related to that too. So could be he's busy with side projects for another week or so, and then we'll see him back in TV pretty soon. So it's kind of a good way of rotating guys here and there as well if you need it. So,
but I am very much looking forward to Jericho against Jungle Boy in Corpus Christi. The final final show of 2019. So,
yes. So after that, we get an update from the commentary booth, basically informing us that due to her actions earlier, Nyla Rose has been suspended because she put her hands on Rick Knox. Which, it's fair. I mean, Rick Knox deserves better. Just it's unfortunate.
No sorrow overshadowed. It's just like
does he though, Chris? Does he really?
Yes, he does. Rick Knox is a saint. He beat the shit out of the Young Bucks multiple times. He deserves gold medals based on that alone over the years.
Oh my god! Yeah, and look where he is now. They get paychecks from him.
I mean, look, you got to make your money where you can. From there, though, we do go on into what was really my favorite match of the entire night, which was the banger that was Hikaru Shida versus Chris Statlander.
Oh my God. I did get to see this match. Chris, you go ahead first.
Oh, no, just I was just giddy from start to finish. Like, even when this got announced back on Monday, I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. And it was everything I wanted and then some.
This was the first match I actually got to see tonight. And, this match fucking ruled. Straight out. Chris Statlander is so good. And I got to see her this past Saturday because she wrestled Jessica Havoc for the AAW women's title. And, that was actually the last match of the evening. And, Chris Statlander, I'm all for her. She is fantastic.
Also, Statlander has officially surpassed the best friends by having, like, the best worst Tron video out of anybody in AEW, too, after this. Because, my God. I get it, but at the same time, I don't get it.
Gotta say, low-key, I kind of low-key like her entrance theme, though.
The theme was fine, yeah. I was okay with that. Tron was just like, wow.
The Tron is like, you know, mid-90s rave ridiculous, but the theme, as much as of an issue as we've had with a lot of the theme songs in AEW, I actually kind of dig that one. So, yeah. But let's not forget Hikaru Shida in all this either.
No, absolutely not. She was great for Ada too. And I mean, Lawrence, I'm sure like you were geeking out about this as much as we were for it. So,
By all means. I mean, this was an absolutely fantastic TV match. They just both really matched each other. I felt in terms of skill level and just, I think Chris Statlander is just good beyond her years. Like, it's like you have to remember she really has not been wrestling that long, and that's the scary thing. It's like she's only gonna get better too, like, and she's already like a wrestling machine, and like Dylan Hales on Twitter, like he tweeted that, you know, she really could be in the discussion for like wrestler of the year. I mean, like the way she's been mm-hmm. this year, and I mean I wouldn't argue with it because, I mean, from what I've seen, and it hasn't even been that much, like, she's just phenomenal. Like, she's one of the best prospects I've seen come up in probably since Matt Riddle.
I definitely agree with that. She's probably the best prospect the grabs.
I get that vibe real from her. Like, whoa, like, she's special. Like, she's a special talent. Like,
and the biggest thing to me too is that I know she did stunt work prior to coming into wrestling, and I almost feel like that sort of gives her an advantage, not only from like the perspective of, hey, you're taking falls and such, but just sort of how to choreograph things and keep pace with a lot of the girls like with Hikaru Shida, with Riho, like these girls that are a high volume, like, you know, work that kind of fast-paced, you know, strong strike. Yeah, exactly. Which we haven't seen with the Britt Bakers of the world and stuff like that. So Statlander is a huge get for them.
Her ability to just transition into stuff is just impeccable. I just find it. She's just very, very smooth, and everything she does is just so detailed and so smooth, and just, man. I'm a huge fan.
I might go so far as to say this might actually have been the best women's match in the very short history of AEW so far.
It's definitely up there, I think, with the Riho Nyla title match as of right now. For sure.
I think it may actually have outdone that just slightly. That's fair. And Chris, definitely, we were both huge fans of that match, you know.
Absolutely.
On the very first, mm-hmm. you know, episode of Dynamite and Boom Goes the Dynamite. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For sure. But again, the biggest surprise out of that, I think, for a couple of people was the fact that Big Bang Theory got it done for Chris Statlander. She gets her first singles win in the company, and it's against the number one contender, basically.
Yeah, that was a big shock. That was a big shock.
I wonder, are they going to do like a three-way? That's what I'm wondering.
Oh, please no.
I don't want that either, because I think everybody is just tired of three-way.
And if anybody wants to make a joke about, you know, three-way with women, yeah, go to hell.
I wasn't going there.
None of us are going there, but for those who do.
Those who do, yeah. Because, you know, we're not one of these scumbag podcasts that are out there, but...
like Brad Shepard, you mean? Or like...
I wasn't going to name names, but, you know... But
I will.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Let's do it.
Actually, I don't actually know anything about the whole Brad Shepard thing. Maybe tell me off the air. But anyway.
Off the air. Yeah. Sure. There was something big that happened, obviously, which was lights go down. Awesome Kong shows up, and I'm going, "Oh shit! Here we go. This is gonna be good." And then Brandi Rhodes shows up, and I'm like, "Oh, man. We have to get through that now." Oh.
Dude,
and then it turns out she's running a cult too.
Somehow Brandi Rhodes has made Awesome Kong unlikable. How she has managed to do that is beyond me. But she has managed to do that for me.
I'm sorry. I just have to interject here for a second. Are we sure that this is actually a cult, or is this just like a secret society? Because a cult usually has like some religious aspect to it.
You sound like a WWE announcer right now, Jeff.
Do I? Or do I sound like somebody who's researched cults before?
No, God damn it. It's not a cult. It's a secret society.
No, I'm just asking the question because they did the whole thing with the weird thing on Halloween with the candles and all that, and there's, you know, the taking of trophies, which, yeah, that could mean some sort of magic relevance. Yes, I agree. But she didn't go about it as if it were a cult, because she kept referencing this is what they call it, the Nightmare Collective.
Yeah, which, again, I'm not sure what's more cringeworthy, the fact that the Nightmare family has an off branch, or the fact that she referenced that as being the 2000s X-Force part of the Nightmare family, which, fuck off.
Damn.
Oh,
Wait a minute. Chris, the 2000s X-Force was Ecstatics, though. Which, that was a good book.
That was her reference, in particular, for that. But again, I just feel like comparing the 2000s X-Force to anything Brandi Rhodes is doing is just not really... It doesn't pair up. To me, I'm sorry. This feels like a line Cody Fetter. Anyway.
Well, again, anything involving the Elite seems to be the weakest part of any AEW show, for the most part.
I mean, she's just bad. She's just making Awesome Kong just like a chore to get through. Like, how does that happen? Like, Jesus, just let Awesome Kong wrestle.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I think.
More to the point, let Awesome Kong wrestle Aja Kong like they fucking tease back at Fight for the Fallen.
Right? Oh my God. Yeah.
Or was it Fighter Fest?
Yeah.
It was Fight for the Fallen, I think.
Fall. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So here's my biggest thing off that, is that eventually once they get through all that, Statlander's standing up to Awesome Kong and Brandi, like she's holding her ground in the center of the ring as she should, and then they do a whole thing where they're trying to offer her to join this whole collective thing. And then somebody in the crowd is basically like, no, I'll do it. Please. Let me pledge. As it turns out from researching through Twitter and such, it's a Illinois local wrestler in the scene called Melanie Cruz. That is the one that did that whole letting Brandi and Awesome Kong pretty much shave most of her hair off right there and then as they were going into commercial breaks. So that is a thing that happened. I guess they have a new recruit. I guess we'll learn more about her over the next few weeks, and she is a wrestler as well. So I'm assuming that's a new signee that they've got. But again, it's just kind of like, okay, so Statlander is going to fight Kong at some point, right? Can we make that happen? Can we do that without any Brandis around? Please? Maybe? I don't know, man.
Just for the record, I got nothing about Melanie Cruz. I'm not familiar one bit.
I have nothing but the name, unfortunately. Yeah, so it's kind of a wait and see for me as well.
I also have nothing. I just found out the AEW Dark stuff going on for tonight, but we can wait for.
Yeah, until at the end of the show, we can go over those matches because I saw it as well, finally posted somewhere. So, yeah, we can do it. But from that, got another commercial break. We go into it, and it's finally time for the grudge match we've been waiting on for a couple weeks.
Before you get into that, Chris, yeah. You mentioned something with commercial breaks. Man, I feel like some of these commercial breaks points that they choose to go into are just very inconvenient.
The timing has not been good on them. I agree.
It's been really bad. Like I don't know if that's something that they need to coordinate with advertisers better or what. But man, it's just it really interrupts the flow of the show, in my opinion. Like I think it really, really messes things up at times.
Lawrence, mm-hmm. I don't disagree, but that decision may be above their pay grade. So
I know. That's what I mean. It's just it's just something I'm pointing out. I know it's not something they may not be able to. It might be hard to fix, but it's very bad at times where there's certain times where they'll cut away and I'm like, no, like why are you cutting away like now? During that whole Nyla Rose beatdown segment, they did that, and I'm like, why am I watching this through a picture-in-picture? Like this is actually a really cool segment, and I want to see it like in full picture.
But Lawrence, think of it though. The last time wrestling was on TNT, they would have just cut to the commercial and then come back. It was like, folks, during the break, you missed this, and then they would have played it, you know?
Yeah, but I almost would have rather that.
maybe you got something there.
It's weird to say the least. The timing hasn't been good, but hopefully it's something that with the more that they do this picture-in-picture stuff between the network and the production side, they kind of figure out the proper timing and pacing on all ends, so that way it does pace itself as best as you can in a situation like that. Going back to the show, though, Christopher Daniels versus Pentagon Jr. finally happens. Match itself, Rice Brandsburg's already having to try and restore order already before the match even starts, because as it turns out, Christopher Daniels literally just springboards off the ropes into Pentagon as he's making his entrance, because, well, it's a blood feud, so at least I'm glad they're throwing hands and bows already before bells, compared to just, you know, your collared elbow wrist things that tend to happen in other places to start matches. But from there, though, the match itself, I mean, it was okay. I felt bad for Daniels, like, badly oofing on that Arabian press that he tried to do, which did not look good by any means.
Yeah, no, that was a hellified botch there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But, and Lawrence, you yourself mentioned something about that moonsault on top of it, too, when we were talking about it during the show.
Okay, first of all, is there anything more cringeworthy than Chris Daniels' 50-year-old ass singing along to his own theme song in that getup of his?
I mean, he very much looks like a dad doing dad rock stuff at this point of his life.
My God, he's like a parody of himself at this point. It's pretty sad. But yeah, that was horrible. That was just like, what, dude, just don't. Stop! Like, don't do that move anymore, please.
You know, I think that might have been karma for when he and Kazarian botched Celebrity Rehab at Global Wars 2016 and did some damage to Liger for a little bit. So,
I forgot about that.
I had a virtual front row view of it. So.
Good Lord. Interesting fact, though, this actually, for Christopher Daniels, it was the first time he actually wrestled on TNT since, get this, January 22nd, 2001, when he wrestled Mike Modest on WCW Nitro.
Oh, my God. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Oh, yeah, that does take me back quite a while. Oh, my God. Christ. That's four wrestlers now, I think. That have been on that were on Nitro,
yeah.
In AEW, can you name all four?
Let's see. Off the top of my head, I've got Jericho.
Okay.
Got Daniels now with this one. Dustin Rhodes would be the third, I would think.
Yep. There's one more.
And then, I've got nothing on that one. I'm sorry.
Lawrence, do you want to take a crack at this one?
What's the question?
The four wrestlers that wrestled on TNT prior to AEW.
That are currently working with AEW?
Currently working with AEW, yes.
Okay, well, so it would be Chris Daniels, obviously Dustin Rhodes.
Yep.
And then, give me a second here.
Well, Chris already named three of them, so.
Who was the third one, Chris?
That would be Le Champion.
Oh, yeah, duh. Oh, Jesus. Oh, and then there's one that's like, it's
5 seconds.
I'm blanking right now.
The answer is Shima.
Oh, duh. Oh, yeah, God. That's right. Oh my God.
So there you go.
He was on a Nitro, or was it like a Thunder?
I thought it was on a Nitro, but really, I mean, my memory could be wrong though.
Yeah, because I know Cena was on like the worldwide and stuff like that, and like I don't, for whatever reason,
I was pretty sure he was on a Nitro. I thought he was teaming with Magnum Tokyo.
Oh yeah, you're probably right. Actually,
but, admittedly I could be wrong on that.
No, you're right. Yeah, yep.
That would make sense.
He was,
yeah,
he was on Nitro. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So.
Yep.
So anyway, this match, it was, I really liked the result because I was about ready to throw hands with, the air if Penta did the job again, but yeah.
The way they finished it was just the discussion that we had about Phoenix and the Lucha Bros earlier in the show about them being heels and not working. Apply it to this match, the ending of this match, times 1,000 at this point.
Yeah. Because,
Jesus, fuck guys.
Yeah. Well, I'm really just hoping that this is the end of between that stinker of a main event last week and this. I'm really hoping this is the end of that SCU super push.
And here's my thing, like, SCU is fine, but the thing is, it's a heel gimmick. It's them literally insulting every town that they're in and saying nothing is as good as Southern California. Like, that is not... If the alignments are completely switched here in the wrongest ways possible, you guys. Like,
yeah,
come on.
It is a bit of a wacky world here. And really, were it not for Orange Cassidy, there's every reasonable expectation that even best friends could be heels.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not for Orange Cassidy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree with that.
So,
but I mean, decent match outside of the one or two awkward botches that were in there. Some really nice close falls in that regard, but the finish just kind of made me go eh at the end of it all. So
yeah.
From there though, we did get if we're talking about a situation where we have like two. A possible goth-off between Allie and Brandi Rhodes. Allie won this round because their promo between Butcher, Blade, and Money was just much better off, in which they explained who they were. They basically explained that they're sick and tired of seeing Cody's face on everything and that they're coming to cut the head off the snake, which, yeah, simple.
Damn.
Yeah, no, they literally went at him for it, which I'm like, cool. More people should be doing that, to be honest.
Yeah, I think this is... Yeah, I missed that promo because I think this is when my power had come back on, so I was, frantically trying to, get things... Get my heat on and make sure that, food wasn't going bad in my fridge and shit like that, so,
For sure. But, I mean, once that is said and done, we go into our main event for the evening, the rematch from Fyter Fest between Joey Janela and Jon Moxley. Match itself, two men who were more than willing to kill one another, and it showed. Janela, I think, always works best when he has a little bit more, fire on him, and he gets a lot of these, high-profile opponents to really just show out and just try to kill himself accordingly with his type of style. Moxley being kind of a bigger, buffer guy on top of the two, like, really helped add to the dynamic as well. And just, it worked. I think they did really well with the time that they had TV-wise, and some gnarly bumps throughout the match too. So,
I will say this: I really appreciated that early, like the chop off, because they really put over that Moxley was the far more powerful wrestler, and you know, it just, once again, you know, they're really, really trying to build him as a top guy, and that's really what they should be doing, because holy shit, I honestly don't think anybody is more over than Jon Moxley, with the possible exceptions of Orange Cassidy and Kenny Omega.
Yeah. Well, that's a very fair statement to make, for sure. And Janela himself, again, kind of earning his stripes with trying to just build himself up as an active within the company, even if he might not be as popular as some of the aforementioned guys in question. But taking bumps like an imploding avalanche of Death Rider into the top turnbuckle before taking a regular one to finish things off.
Oh, my God.
That'll do it.
You know, I do appreciate that they're making the Death Rider like this actual, or, you know, paradigm shift. Oh, shit. I do appreciate that they're actually trying to make this like this actual death move, you know?
Yeah. And not just that, but making it also that he can hit it from just about anywhere in the vicinities of the ring, too, which is a big deal. So,
yeah, I mean,
it is working out.
Yeah, I mean, that avalanche one he hit, who was it? He hit one on Darby Allin too, didn't he?
Yes, it was Darby, and Darby took the gnarliest bump off of it too, which just, yeah, I could see him selling like for 3 weeks not being on TV after taking that, to be honest with you. This is fine.
Fair enough.
But after that, Moxley picks up another win. Momentum is starting to ride. He's basically establishing himself as the number one man in the company that isn't the champion right now. And as a little bit of one-upsmanship from the previous week, Jericho alongside the Inner Circle comes out through the crowd to stare at Moxley in the center of the ring, like Moxley did to Jericho last week around. So nice little reversal of the roles there, and we go off the air.
Yeah.
So for everybody involved here, what did we think of this edition of Dynamite start to finish?
Oh, certainly better than last week.
just the limited stuff that I saw. Yeah, it seemed much more interesting, compelling than last week's show. And I wasn't even at last week's show, and it was fun. But again, it was not the best show I've ever been to, and it was pretty down from last week. Although ironically, it looks like AEW did actually win in the ratings last week, contrary to what I thought would happen. I thought I saw that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I misread it.
Yeah, I haven't paid attention to the ratings side of defense, but I'll say this for this week's show, definitely improvement from last week's, and I think the match quality and letting some of these matches get time for people to do what they needed to do with it was a good thing. We definitely need a little bit more of that and less of Cody trying to be Triple H with 15-20 minute promos. Please, like,
jeez.
Like, there's too much, like, at this point, it's like PTSD at this point when you see a situation like that. So,
you know, I kind of brought this up last week. It's like, if you want to be an alternative to WWE, don't do the WWE shtick. You know?
Yeah.
That's the best way of describing it. So,
one would have thought that, you know, the years and years of Impact and Ring of Honor trying to do, you know, be that alternative and failing miserably because of trying to ride the same wave. You know, I mean, yeah, there's an argument to be said that, yeah, how much difference can you make on a pro wrestling TV show? It's like, well, a lot of these guys have worked in different systems, non-WWE systems. You know, how many of these guys have worked in, you know, extensively in New Japan or, you know, let's just say it, Dragon Gate, you know? Or DDT, even, you know?
Sure
thing.
It's
a
definitely
different system that they could transplant. They could adapt it. And, I mean, again, like you said, I enjoyed the opening segment last week, but I hope they never do that again. Because, again, like you said, we have the PTSD, this Pavlovian PTSD from, you know, decades of 20-minute opening opening segment promos, you know?
And the problem is, too, is that a lot of these segments are just approached with the same formula of one guy that's usually at the hierarchy of the car talking, another one interrupting back and forth, maybe a brawl here and there, just no really, not a whole lot of variation from it. At least with last week's, you had a couple of different things that they were trying to do, and some of them hit, some of them missed, but at the very least, it felt at least slightly different from that, even though it lasted about the same amount of time. But from that, though, Dynamite in general, much better, I think, this week than last week. I think we can all agree on that. And, Lawrence, you mentioned you have already the matches for Dark that are going to be coming up next Tuesday.
Yeah. So we have on commentary, Orange Cassidy, Chucky T and Britt Baker, which is the most interesting combination of people on commentary.
At the same time?
I don't know at the same time. I think they probably, I would think they staggered them out. Yeah. But then, yeah, is I don't know what the order is, but Kenny Omega versus Kip Sabian, which is, I mean, I guess it's cool.
Is that for the AAA title, or we don't know?
I have no idea. And Jimmy Havoc versus Peter Avalon versus Scorpio Sky.
There we go. The push is dead. The SCU super push is dead, folks.
But then the best match out of all of these easily, Luchasaurus and Marco Stunt versus the Beaver Boys.
That should be
pretty darn awesome.
That should be phenomenal. My God.
Why don't they just go ahead and hire the Beaver Boys at this point?
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't. I mean, they basically just did that with Statlander, so.
It might be what's next at this point. Honestly, they've just been using them for these trials, but I think they've been in enough TV matches at this point where, like, yeah, just hire them on. It's whatever.
We've seen
them already.
They've had more TV time than Sonny Kiss.
This is true. It's sad.
Yeah,
but
don't be wrong. They've had more TV time than Sonny Kiss.
Oh, man. Ugh.
So. Again, it's one of those things. And again, Kenny Omega, executive vice president, stuck on Dark again. So that tells you something too.
I did think it was rather interesting. He wasn't on TV. He wasn't on TNT tonight.
Yeah, but I was okay with a week off. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean it's fine.
But outside of that, I mean that's pretty much us wrapped up for Dynamite this week around. Dark's breakdown is here, so we'll be looking for that come next Tuesday on the, I believe it would be, what, the 10th? Yes, on the 10th. So, but until then, I figured it's as good of a time as any to get our plugs in there. So, Jeff, how about you start us off?
You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel. And, of course, we ended up dropping another pod blast on Busting Balls. That's soundcloud.com/busting-balls because Arsenal went and fired their manager mid-last week. Oof. Actually, on Friday. So, yeah, we had all hell's been breaking loose in North London this season. between Arsenal and Spurs. So, anyway, soundcloud.com/busting-balls. Eventually, we're going to get around to doing a full episode. Maybe we can go a week without some major manager getting fired and having to talk about it.
Fingers crossed, right? From there, Lawrence, how about you? I know you've got some stuff down the pipeline here, especially over the past few weeks.
Oh, yes, I do. I didn't have. First of all, you can find me on Twitter at LOB_3. Just dropped the second episode of the newly rebooted. Does that make sense? The newly rebooted Puro in the Rough.
Yeah, it does.
Whatever. I you know what I mean. Puro in the Rough's back, boys. If you haven't heard, and we've already had, and this is now on our second episode that we just dropped, and it's not just me and Isaac this time. On this, we also had special guests, Jamail, the real hero himself. And so we
phenomenal episode, by the way. Got some fun listen.
We got some scoops. We got some match reviews. We got some card, you know, looking over some big December cards from Dragon Gate, Noah, Big Japan, the 25th anniversary show. So definitely check it out. I recommend it if you don't mind soldiering through the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And as for myself, simple enough, you can find me on Twitter or through Instagram at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. You can check out this podcast, Boom Goes the Dynamite, our other podcast, Strong Style Story, and many other podcasts in the Pro Wrestling Only family at soundcloud.com/ProWrestOnly, Pro Wrestling Only, including Days of Thunder, which is mine and Jeff's arguably favorite podcast in the entire network, though there are others. Very fine podcast to cover a variety of topics.
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna go ahead and
great sport of pro wrestling.
Yeah, actually, I want to throw a plug in for the latest episode of the Worldcast with Pete, Johnny Sorrow, and Kelly, because they go over an episode of World Class from November of '83 that was just an absolutely massive episode. So I would actually highly advise everybody go ahead and listen to that, and they plug us a lot too, so that's cool.
Yeah,
lastly, just for historical context, if you're unfamiliar with Pro in the Rough, this was the show. This was the reason why Lawrence is part of our little family here, is because we grabbed him from that show when we were doing the Super J Cup 2016 preview. And
like to call it, the only good thing to come out of that entire Super J Cup was our episode.
Was that episode, which is also how we met the Cubs fan too, and also Michael Steele from at the time it was Open the Voice Gate, the Dragon Gate podcast, but now he is actually a competing AEW podcast called Everything Elite. So.
I know he still does
Michael Spears. I'm sorry, I said Michael Steele. Michael Spears, my bad.
Sounds like a porn star name.
Yeah, no kidding.
Or a wrestler name. What's the difference, folks?
What's the difference?
Indeed. But no, I think he still does come in through Open a Voice Gate every so often as well. But yeah, he's definitely been working with the Voices of Wrestling guys on their AEW side as well. But I mean, for us at Pro Wrestling Only, as you mentioned, with the Worldcast through the years, also had an episode that just came out a couple weeks back on Generation Next as well. I know they covered a lot of major kind of Ring of Honor topics from that golden era, which they had in the mid-2000s, so definitely worth a listen.
Oh, and lastly, this one snuck by me. Tom Batista, the Military Industrial Suplex, just dropped a new one, interviewing the Ultimate Diva, Candy Lee.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
So, anyway, Chris, thanks for taking the lead on this one.
Yeah, no worries. It was a very intriguing experience that I'm looking forward to doing in another 6 weeks when another emergency arrives.
Yeah, maybe. So, anyway, Chris or Lawrence, any final thoughts?
I got nothing else to be honest with you.
Okay, Chris?
Well, boom goes the dynamite.
We'll see you next week. Thanks.